Blog Talk Radio.
For you, I told you it was going to happen, and it happened. Donald Trump support surges. Absolutely surges. Like the old shitty soda that was actually, I think, kind of good, because I've only had it like once or twice, but I remember it being pretty good. It was like pure sugar, but surge soda was delicious. But Donald Trump is surging. I got off the point there for a second, but I'm back on it. He's surging. All right, I'm going to kick it off with that, but also, we have Trump saying, oh, did I say I was going to release my tax returns? What I meant was www.imnotgoingtoreleasemytaxreturns.com/go suck a goat. That's what he said in the exact words. Imagine he really said that. I think I'd have to vote for him if he said that. And then beyond that, I mean, I got corruption oozing from this show. Not because I'm corrupt, but because we're going to discuss corruption. And later on, further evidence from public policy polling that the United States of America, the people in the United States of America, are super liberal. Super liberal. Not even, like, I even get annoyed at this point when people say the U.S. is center-left. It's just left. There's no center, nothing. In terms of if you look at the United States in the context of the United States political spectrum, we're off the spectrum to the left. It's fair to say internationally most Americans are kind of moderate or centrist. But in the United States, we're almost all Bernie Sanders. So I'm going to give you more data on that. And then later on, oh, goodness gracious, please don't tell me that George Zimmerman made his way into the show. He did. He did. He's in the show, and you should be just as annoyed by that as I am. Okay. So, without further ado, however you pronounce that word, let's get started, and I got to dive in with Trump. What else is new? Apparently, it's the Donald Trump show nowadays. I told you it was going to happen, and it happened. Reuters reports, Donald Trump's support has surged, and he is now running nearly even with Hillary Clinton among likely U.S. voters, a dramatic turnaround since he became the Republican Party's presumptive presidential nominee, according to a poll released on Wednesday. The results could signal a close fight between the two likely White House rivals. As recently as last week, Clinton led Trump by around 13 points in the poll. In the most recent survey, 41% of likely voters supported Clinton, and 40% backed Trump. By the way, this poll has a plus or minus of 3 percentage points. Therefore, they're almost dead tied. That should scare everybody. So, why such a big jump in, you know, a week or 2 weeks here in support for Trump? Well, the answer is very simple. Cruz and Kasich are gone now. If you listen to all the pundits on TV, what did they tell you? Well, I mean, see, the thing about Donald Trump is he's such a unique character that the people who are voting for and supporting the other candidates, that if that candidate drops out, there's no way that he will gain the support of the Republican voters who are going to vote for the other candidates because they dislike him that much. Well, now we know that is not true. In fact, we know the opposite is true now. That everybody who was supporting Cruz, everybody who was supporting Kasich, the negative 8 people who were supporting Kasich, the people who supported Rubio, all the other people, they're now like, oh, so our candidate is Donald Trump? I will support Donald Trump. Now, why did the media miss this so badly? Well, again, the answer is pretty simple. Because all the people who you hear talk about this are either in their elite New York bubble or they're in their elite Washington bubble. And in that context, they think Donald Trump is a joke and they don't take him seriously in any way. So you start to assume that the rest of the country mirrors that when they do not. All the people in the room with you, if you're in the elite bubble in New York and Washington, are super rich and they're part of the establishment. The people elsewhere in the country are not. So the Republican base indeed is not divided on Trump. They're all going to fall in line behind Trump. The only place where there's a split on Trump is in elite circles and in establishment circles, which is why there's been roughly, 12 articles written about how, Donald Trump, he's going to lose a lot of Republican base voters. But people are just assuming that the base voters are going to mirror the actions of the establishment Republicans and the neocons, for example, and they most certainly are not going to do that. So it is true that the establishment, the elite Republicans are split. In fact, many of them have just said, I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton. Many neocons have said, I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton. But Trump's response is essentially, see ya, wouldn't want to be ya, don't give a fuck. Because the base is going to fall in line behind him. All the things that the establishment of Republicans think are a deal breaker about Trump actually help him with the Republican base. Again, this is something nobody tells you. It's not like your average Joe Republican is sitting around going, Donald Trump doesn't sufficiently stand up for the principles of free trade. He's talking about tariffs, and I'm anti-protectionist because that's conservative values. No, they're honestly, just like the liberals, the conservatives are like, where'd my job go? Because it was shipped overseas, and they're right about that. And also, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Listen to the idiots Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz on a debate stage saying, we got to cut entitlements. We got to cut it. We got to cut it. Republicans don't want to cut it any more than Democrats want to cut it. Your average Joe Republican. They say, oh, yeah, we hate government. But then they go to rallies where they literally hold up signs that say, keep your government hands off my Medicare. That is government, dipshit. So they love those things, and Trump has said, I'm going to protect those things. But the elite Republicans, the establishment Republicans, and the media figures go, oh, you see, he's going to lose all the Republican voters. He wants to protect Social Security and Medicare. Tisk, tisk. But then that's actually a reason why base voters like him more. So it's amazing to me that the people who have been wrong every step of the way are still making predictions about Donald Trump. Yeah, he's got no chance. He's got no shot, no hope whatsoever. It's no longer just my theory. And for a while, by the way, it was my theory because, we didn't have any results yet. But all along I said, hey, this is what it's going to be like. Now we know. Now we have the numbers. It is indeed true that there is no split among actual Republican base voters. And by the way, also, Donald Trump gets independents at a higher rate than Hillary Clinton. Also, he gets new voters at a higher rate than Hillary Clinton. And also, Hillary Clinton does terrible with one demographic that the Democrats need to win, millennials. So if turnout is low, that biases the election in favor of Trump. And all of the fucking think pieces and cackling idiots who've been saying all along, the race is over. Hillary Clinton will be our next president. Like Biden said the other day, they have no clue what they're talking about. If they don't realize that this is a coin flip election today, they're hopeless. Because that's what it is. It is a coin flip election. And that should scare you even more because guess what? When it gets really heated and they start attacking each other, Trump has shown signs that he's actually going to do the right strategy in general, where he is going to pivot to the left and he's going to do that on foreign policy. He's going to do that on wages, as he's already done. He's going to continue to say the same things about Social Security. He's going to continue to on regulation and corruption, he might outflank her on her left. And if that's the case, look out. And Hillary has shown signs that she doesn't know what the fuck she's doing. She's going to run to the right and lose more voters. She's going to alienate her base because they're not going to fall in line and vote for her, unlike the Republicans will fall in line and vote for Trump. She's going to alienate her base and lose more independents, ironically, by trying to gain them. Because like we covered the other day from her rally, she's out there in the rally attacking Trump because in her opinion, he's a dangerous isolationist. Isolationism is a right-wing smear word for the wildly popular non-interventionism, which 57% of the American people are in favor of. But she's attacking him for that, as opposed to, for example, attacking him for when he said, let's kill civilians in the Middle East. It's hilarious that Hillary Clinton doesn't see as big of a problem with that as she does with, oh, he's an isolationist. So her line of attack against him is going to be, you don't want to get involved in Syria enough. You think that's a recipe to win the election? That's going to help him. Oh, this is poised to get ugly, man. This coin flip election may soon become a situation where Donald Trump is leading and he's the favorite. Again, you heard it here first. Everybody's telling you he has no shot. Oh, he certainly has a shot, and now the numbers prove it. I keep warning you, I'm fucking sounding the alarm every single day. All right, more. Now we move over to Trump and his brazen flip-flop. Donald Trump is flip-flopping on a promise that he made on the campaign trail repeatedly, according to the Associated Press. Now he does not plan to release his tax returns, as is tradition for candidates for elected office. So what's the reason that he gives? Why does he say, no, I'm not going to do it? Because he claims, hey, I'm being audited. I mean, this is the same thing that he said for seemingly like years now. Hey, you're going to release tax returns? I'm being audited. That's a pretty goddamn long audit. And also, he went on to say, they're looking at 4 or 5 years' worth of taxes. And as the article points out on this, they say, the IRS doesn't really do that. They only go back like 3 years. So you get the overwhelming sense, again, that Trump is just saying whatever he wants to say and whatever he needs to say to dodge accountability. And he's just like, yeah, no, I'm being audited. There's a chance he's not even fucking being audited. So this is incredible. And the last time somebody did this, I think, was 1976, where they ran for president. And they're like, I'm just not going to release my tax returns. So, no stranger to tax controversies, Mitt Romney chimed in on this, and he said, there's only one logical explanation for Mr. Trump's refusal to release his returns. There is a bombshell in them. Given Mr. Trump's equanimity with other flaws in his history, we can only assume it's a bombshell of unusual size. And he goes on to say, this is disqualifying. Mitt Romney is hilarious. Like, he chimes in every few months to attack Trump, and he thinks that people who are politically astute don't get that he still has a raging hard-on to be president of the United States. Like, that is what he wants. So he's like, you know, a jealous kid. Like, it's disqualifying. Hey, people came after me for my tax returns. Everybody, let's go after him, too, for his tax returns. And it's true, people did go after Mitt Romney for his tax returns, because he was withholding them for a long time. When he finally released them, we learned that he's paying less than many construction workers and accountants are, and he pretended, he's like, what? What do you mean? I paid some tax. What are you talking about? Meanwhile, you know, people who make a kind of a middle-class living, some of them are paying 20%, 25%. His punk ass was paying 14% on millions of dollars in income when he just sits on his couch making the income because he makes it through investments. So he only has to pay the capital gains tax, which, of course, is lower and somebody who's a working person who pulls in maybe 70 grand a year. So he was a jackass on this front, but now Trump is being a jackass too. But there are two important points to make about this, and here's why I think Trump is hiding it and why, indeed, he's not going to release it. Number one, I can guarantee you right now he's also paying anywhere from 15% to maybe 0%. Maybe he's paying no tax whatsoever. Why am I so confident in saying that? Because, look, when you're somebody who's wealthy, you honestly have an army of people who their entire job is to find a way to get you to legally dodge your taxes. So you exploit loopholes, you do all these tricky things, and then you turn around at the end of the day, and when they try to get you on it, you go, what do you mean? The loopholes are there, and they exist for a reason, so I didn't do anything wrong here. So there are many rich people and many corporations, as you guys well know, that pay 0%. There are some corporations that pay a negative tax rate. So they get a subsidy back from the government, even if they're wildly profitable. Trump is in the same boat here. I guarantee you he's paying anywhere from 15% to 0%. I would be shocked if he's paying over 15% in taxes. Honestly, in this scenario here, if he had nothing to hide, he would just release them. He would release them and say, see, paying my taxes, doing my due diligence. But then there's another reason here. Trump claims to be worth about $9 billion, and actually it depends on which interview you look at, because he's used different numbers at different times, some higher, some lower, but he always says, yeah, you know, a billionaire with multiple billions of dollars. He always claims this. Okay. That's definitely not true. At best, it's half that. So he says it's $9 billion. At best, you're talking 4.5. That's absolute best. And even that's a lot. But, I mean, obviously, he's just an exaggerator, so he exaggerates even when there's no need to. But that's the best case scenario. There's a chance he's not even worth $1 billion. Now, when he launched his campaign, he did this whole goofy thing where he's up there talking and he holds up a sheet of paper. He's like, this is from my accountant or my tax lawyer or whatever. And, I paid him a lot of money to say I'm worth $9 billion. So, here, see, it says I'm worth $9 billion. And they were like, ooh, $9 billion. Like, no, you jackass. First of all, thou doth protest too much. Why are you even bringing that up when you're launching your campaign? Nobody asked at that point. Like, it's just weird. I'm worth this much. Why? Why does that matter? Because he's bragging, oh, this is what I am, see? I'm a great businessman. I'm worth this much money, see? But again, thou doth protest too much. Like, oh, you're just keep trying to shove it in our faces. Why? It's not true. And I actually, not to get too deep into stuff here, but one of my friends, his father is a well-connected guy, successful entrepreneur, and he's a member at one of the most exclusive golf courses, honestly, in the world. And there's somebody else who's a member there, Donald Trump. He says, well, number one, nobody likes Trump. Even among, like, the elites, they're like, this fucking jackass, I can't take this guy. But also, he's told me for years, even before you had Trump running and doing all this stuff, he said, no way he's worth that amount of money. Not a chance. Not a snowball's chance in hell. Not even close. And, you know, again, there's a chance he's not even a billionaire. And he said, oh, I'm a billionaire. There's a chance he only has like $500 million. Which, again, is still a lot of money, but the fact of the matter is he always brags about, I'm $9 billion, this, that. Well, that's not true. So he wouldn't release it because the tax rate he's paying is super low, and he could be attacked for that, and because the amount of money that he's making and his actual net worth is just much lower than what he says it is. So... that's probably why he's not doing it. But then also, let me make a third prediction here. Even if he were to release it, it still wouldn't hurt him. It wouldn't hurt him. Because stuff like this never hurts him. There's not a single Republican-based voter who would look and say, ooh, he paid 7% in taxes. Ooh, he's only worth, whatever, let's say $740 million, not a billion. Ooh, he only made $2 million last year, whatever the fuck it is. I can't vote for him now. No, they'd be like, still rich, still want to make America great again, man. So I always find it hilarious that idiots like Mitt Romney are like, yeah, this will get him, see, there's a scandal over the tax. No, it won't, it won't do anything to him, it won't even hurt him 1% in the polls, even if he did release all the shit, and it showed us stuff like I just described here. It just wouldn't hurt him, because if there's one thing that establishment pricks on the left and the right don't get, it's how to attack Trump. They don't know how to attack him. They don't know how to take his worst comments, isolate them, talk about how it makes no sense, highlight his contradictions. They always attack him on stupid shit. Shit like this, and like I just described with Hillary Clinton, how Hillary Clinton attacked him recently at a rally by saying he's an isolationist. Again, the right-wing smear word for the wildly popular non-interventionism. So of all the things Trump has said and all the things he's done in his entire business career, yada, yada, your best line of attack against him is he wants to stay out of Syria. Unbelievable. They're poised to blow this election, and this is another scandal that's telling about Trump, but at the end of the day, it'll be a non-scandal because he's just not going to release them, and even if he did, it wouldn't hurt him. Okay. Good googly moogly. All right. I'm going to move along here to a fascinating story from The Intercept, then we'll take our first break. My bad, I didn't ask you guys for songs today. I had to pull some up at the last minute real quick. I didn't have time. So both of the songs are actually about how beautiful it is outside. Like, I notice how gorgeous it is outside. And I'm like, I need songs. What's happening? Oh, it's a beautiful day. Gave away one right there. You too, beautiful day. The other one's like that too. Anyway, The Intercept. Yet again, doing some fantastic reporting here. Credit to everybody over there. The Intercept is reporting on a stunning story that highlights the corruption at the upcoming Democratic convention. I know everybody, you know, is well aware that the Republicans are corrupt, and we cover that nonstop, but also the Democrats are corrupt. Let's not get it twisted here. They're no angels. So here's what they say. The Democratic Party's 2012 platform pledged to curb the influence of lobbyists and special interests, but the 2016 convention in Philadelphia will be officially hosted by lobbyists and corporate executives, a number of whom are actively working to undermine progressive policies achieved by President Obama, including health care reform and net neutrality. Wow. So they go on to explain here. In October 2015, DNC Chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz reportedly huddled with dozens of lobbyists to plan the convention in Philadelphia and provided the influence peddlers involved with a menu of offerings in exchange for donations. In February, news reports revealed that the DNC had quietly lifted the Obama-era ban on federal lobbyist donations to the party and convention committee. Okay, so let me explain this in more detail for you. This, yet again, was one of the few remaining election laws and money in politics laws that we have on the books. The idea was you can't have special interests and corporations and rich people fund the conventions, because then obviously the politicians and the parties are going to do favors for those special interests. Duh. So this was an area where even Obama was like, let's do something about this. Because honestly, this is just one area and you could do some tweaks around the edges, and this is something that it would allow Obama to do something about it and then turn around and go, see, I'm so good on the issue of money in politics. I did this one little thing about the conventions, and he gets his pass on the back. So Obama, to his credit, by the way, granted I always wanted him to go much further on money in politics, but to his credit, he signed an executive order that said, okay, no more. So what we're going to do is we're going to make it so that this is no longer privately funded, no more special interests, no more corporations, no more rich people funding the conventions, and we're all set. So now there will be no influence peddling. Well, Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the DNC, they decided when nobody was looking fairly recently, how about we slowly lift that rule and move in the other direction when nobody's paying attention here, and now all of a sudden you have lobbyists who fucking run the place, special interests who run the place. And many of the people who are directly involved with this are the same people who, for example, are against Obamacare. They're Republican donors as well, and they're directly involved in the process. So this is the kind of incestuous corruption that we always talk about on the show. If you think the Democrats are just, oh my God, so much better than the Republicans, well, they are bought by many of the same people, especially when it comes to Wall Street. If you say the Democrats are bought by, you know, hey, teachers, unions, lawyers, so on and so forth, less scary special interests, that's true. And the Republicans are kind of unique in taking their oil money. So they have unique special interests, but they both meet on the issue of Wall Street. And they both meet on the issue of, in this case, the health insurance companies. So you got these people who were directly involved in fighting net neutrality and fighting Obamacare, and they are directly involved in shaping the Democratic Convention and giving money for the Democratic Convention. If you don't think that affects everybody in the Democratic Party and the DNC and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, you're fucking crazy. You're crazy. Like, I've seen on Twitter people now attacking The Intercept, attacking Glenn Greenwald, attacking Zaid Jilani and Li Fang, who contributed to this piece, and saying, like, oh, great, now, people who otherwise are liberals and progressives, oh, now The Intercept's going after the Democratic Convention. Oh, great, see what we do, see what's happening here. They're making it seem like it's illegitimate to have the conversation about special interests in the convention. No, that's the most legitimate conversation ever. Like, it's easy to call out the corruption of the Republicans. We all see it. We've all covered it. It's right in your face. You also need to hold your own people accountable. Like, how can you argue in one breath, hey, man, ExxonMobil money, Chevron money, BP money, these guys are bought, and that's why they say climate change is a hoax. How can you say that in one breath, and in the next breath you go, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the DNC being affected by money from lobbyists? No, never. And that's literally the argument that Hillary Clinton made in one of the debates. She went from telling Bernie Sanders that President Obama took money from Wall Street and it didn't affect him, to pivoting, and the very next thing she said was, the Republicans are taking money from all these special interests and doing their bidding. Why do you think you're magically, you know, unscathed and unaffected by the money? No, you are affected by it. To try to pretend otherwise is massively disingenuous. So this is horrible. Like, we have a Democratic Party that's just super corrupt, super corporate. I had this old saying that the Republicans, if the Republicans are 100% corrupt, the Democrats are 80% corrupt. We might have to tick that up to 90. Again, the only areas where they're better, you could say social issues. And then on the fact that, like I just mentioned, the special interests that buy them are slightly less scary, some of them. Lawyers, teachers, unions, yada yada. But outside of that, I mean, this is a corporate party. As Noam Chomsky puts it, we don't have two separate parties in the U.S. We have two factions of the same party, the business party, the corporate party. That's where we're at. And stuff like this absolutely proves it. And if you don't think it affects legislation, you're crazy. Because when we have somebody who's an actual liberal who comes along and says, hey, let's just do the basic things that we used to consider duh, universal health care, universal college, paid vacation time, the rest of the corporate Democrats are like, maybe not. How about that, Bernie? Fuck off. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, oh God, I gotta talk about Barney Frank. Oh, I don't want to talk about Barney Frank. What happened to you, poor Barney? What happened to you, Barney? Whatever happened, I don't like it. It ain't good. So we're gonna talk about him. And then also, public policy polling is out with further evidence that the people across the United States indeed are liberal. And ProPublica is reporting on the failure of the Obama administration to fight discrimination in a really interesting way. So you don't want to miss any of these stories. I got all that and much more. We'll be right back.
Sunlight hurts my eyes. There's something without one another. That's heavy on my mind. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day. Thank you.
All right, bitches, we're back. We ain't going nowhere. We can't be stopped now. Because we're bad boys for life. We ain't. I should have put that song for the break music. All right. Let's talk about Barney Frank, and I hope all of you have a barf bag near you. Former Congressman Barney Frank has been picked to oversee the creation of the Democratic platform this year. That's great. Now, in the past, perhaps this wouldn't be controversial, but now I think it certainly is. So why is that? Well, in a Politico article in December, Barney Frank said the following, and ask yourself whether or not this is in line with the will of the Democratic voters, the actual people. He said, quote, over a 40-year career in elected office, I not only took contributions from the finance industry, I requested them. Yes, I took bank money, and it made me a better regulator. He continues, by demonizing finance industry contributions, we're effectively insisting that instead of 80% of the industry's contributions going to opponents of regulation, it should be 95% or more. Okay, so let's pause here for a second and discuss just how ridiculous this is. His argument is, well, I mean, sure, we all agree that the other side is corrupt and they're bought off and they're against regulation. They take about 80% of the money from the big banks. I mean, what do you want them to get, 100%? Obviously, we should take like 20% of it. Am I right? No, because that money influences them in negative ways. It influences them to be more biased in favor of the industry and to not do regulation and to listen to the industry over the will of the American voters, their constituents, and over the long-term success and viability of the U.S. economy. But in his backwards mind, it's like he dodges the point of, hey, that money might influence you. No, because he actually said, it would make me a better regulator. Yeah, I took money from them, and it made me a better regulator. Oh, I'm sure. In the same way that it makes you better at being the head of the EPA if you used to be an ExxonMobil lobbyist. If you used to be a fossil fuel lobbyist, well, obviously, you know those regulations in and out, so you should be the head of the EPA. Yeah, but you know those regulations in and out because you're used to evading them. So that's the last person who should be the head of the EPA. And the last people who should be regulating banks are people taking gargantuan amounts of money from the banks. This isn't rocket science. But I have more for you. We have a Democrat here who loves money in politics at this point. And also, we have this, quote, Frank sits on the board of directors of a major bank that was recently named in a lawsuit about an alleged Ponzi scheme. Well, that's great. Between 1989 and his retirement in January 2013, he raked in more than $1 million worth of campaign contributions from the securities and investment industry, according to CRP data. More than a third of that cash haul came during the 2010 election cycle when Frank was involved in sculpting new Wall Street rules. So understand this. When he was directly responsible and directly tasked with writing new Wall Street rules, that's when he got the most money from Wall Street. Why do you think that is? They are influence peddling. So when you have the guy who's the fucking referee and one of the teams is fucking paying him, well, that rigs the game. So that's why, and everybody can see very clearly now, Dodd-Frank, I often say, is massively watered down, and it's a joke. I mean, we had the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession. One of the leading factors that led to this was the repeal of Glass-Steagall. In the solution to the problem, we didn't even bring back Glass-Steagall. Why? Well, that would have cut into the profits of banks. That would have made it so that you can't have big banks and commercial banks tied together with investment banking. So they can't do casino capitalist gambling and make money in the short term at the expense of the long-term viability of the economy. So they can't have that, so they fought it. So we didn't change one of the fundamental root causes and problems here. But still Barney Frank wants a pat on the back like, oh, what do you mean? I did great. I did well, didn't I? No, you didn't. when you were doing the regulations, you took the most money you ever took from Wall Street. We know why that is. They said, hey, X-nay on the Glass-Steagall scale, that's going to affect my profits. And they said, hey, all these other things that, you know, would be effective regulations, don't do those either because I got to get mine. So you pay the guy who writes the rules and you get it rigged in your favor. Could you imagine in any other scenario people being so dense about the way this works? Like, could you imagine you have the NBA playoffs are on right now. Could you imagine you had the Golden State Warriors and Steph Curry. They, in a press conference before one of the games, they say, by the way, I just want to let everybody know, we just gave $400,000 to the ref. Like, what? Well, how much did the other team give to the refs? Nothing. The Trailblazers gave the refs $0.00. But don't worry, because the refs assure me there will be no bias. You just gave them $400,000. The Blazers gave them $0.00. Are we really supposed to believe that there's going to be no effect on the way the game is reffed? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And even if you're dense enough to believe that, no, the refs are still going to be professional. Just to be safe, wouldn't you want a ref who's not bought by one of the teams? Just to be safe! It's maddening. This conversation we're having is maddening. So this is a joke, but the cherry on top is this. Here's what Barney Frank used to say about money in politics. Now, depending on what room he's in, he'll change his tone. So if he's in front of a room of progressives, oh, man, yeah, I'm a lion in favor of progressive causes. If he's with his elite establishment prick buddies, well, then he changes his tune here. But here's what he said in the past, quote, people say, oh, it doesn't have any effect on me. Well, if that were the case, we'd be the only human beings in the history of the world who on a regular basis took significant amounts of money from perfect strangers and made sure that it had no effect on our behavior. Indeed, Barney. Indeed. Okay. Whew. Next. Let me give you further evidence of how liberal the American people are. We have a new poll out from Public Policy Polling that is further evidence that the American people are liberal, flat out liberal. Not center left, not centrist, not center right. They are liberal. Say it one more time. They're liberal. Okay, quote, 78% of voters nationally support increasing the minimum wage to at least $10 an hour. 78%. 95% of Democrats support, 69% of independents support, and even 61% of Republicans, a gigantic majority, support a hike to at least $10 an hour. Damn. Okay, so this is one of those issues where you're led to believe, super debatable, it's like a 50-50 thing, I don't know what you mean. I mean, the country is split. No, the country is overwhelmingly on the side of raise it. So why hasn't Congress raised it? There's a very simple answer to that question. The corporations run Congress, and the only people in the country who do not want to raise the minimum wage are the big corporations. So they pay their bribes to the politicians, and the politicians do their bidding, even though 78% of the American people are screaming at Congress, raise the minimum wage, Republicans, independents, Democrats, we all agree, regular people agree. But hey, look at that, they just happen to represent the corporations who give them the money and not the people. Weird, because I'm led to believe that money doesn't affect politicians in that way. It would appear it does. And also, by the way, that's why Congress's approval rating in a recent poll was literally 4%. How is that possible? How can you be that disliked? I'm not sure serial killers are that disliked. 4%? Unbelievable. I have more for you. Quote, 83% of voters nationally support background checks on all gun sales to just 12% who are opposed. There's very broad bipartisan support for that with Democrats, 89% want it, Republicans, 79% want it, and independents, 78% want it. all overwhelmingly in favor of it. Okay, so, yet again, I'm led to believe, it's a close issue, tight issue. This is a tough one, man. We haven't even been able to get a universal background check law through Congress after children were slaughtered at Sandy Hook. Children. There was a massacre of little kids at Sandy Hook. The Democrats proposed reform. The Republicans filibustered it. Now, when did they filibuster it? Then they bragged about it. That's low. So, again, why is this? If even the Republican-based voters, 79% of them say, yeah, do a universal background check. What the fuck's the matter with you? Why haven't we gotten it? Don't make me go through this again. The gun manufacturers pay the NRA. The NRA pays the Republican politicians. The Republican politicians have their marching orders of shut down any and all gun laws that come through. So they do it. So even when 79% of their base, 79% of Republicans says, do the universal background check. Don't be stupid. They go, no, because I'm not listening to you. I'm not listening to my constituents, the people of my party who I'm supposed to agree with. No, I'm listening to the donors. I'm listening to the gun manufacturers and the gun lobbyists. Well, again, we see what the root problem here is, money and politics. And then finally, I'll give you one more here. 68% of voters support the EPA Clean Power Plan to 26% who are opposed. So here we go again. Even among – so some of those 68%, there's a small percentage of that 68% that are probably like climate change deniers too. But when you ask them, hey, you know, do you support the EPA Clean Power Plan, they go, yeah. Why? Because they think, what could possibly be wrong with having less pollution, making the air safer? There's not a conspiracy on the planet that can get people to disagree with that. So 68% of the voters say, of course I'm behind the EPA. Of course I want clean air, clean water, and all these different things. It would be crazy not to. But yet again, we have people in Congress fighting this. Why? It all comes back to the industry. It all comes back to money and politics, like every single other issue. Are you sensing a trend here? The trend is the American people, you name the issue, I tell you just how liberal the American people are in the context of U.S. politics, okay? And then you see how we get no action that backs up what the people want because of the special interests, because of the money in politics. So this all goes back to the study, the Princeton study that was released a few years ago, which found that the U.S. is now effectively an oligarchy. We don't function like a representative democracy in a constitutional republic anymore. We function like an oligarchy. If you look at the opinion polls of the rich and the special interest and the donors, they get what they want. The American people never get what we want. Not the independents, not Democrats, not Republicans who tend to agree with us on many of these issues. So that's the cancer in our system. And make no mistake about it, when people tell you it's a center-right country, it's a conservative country, it's a centrist country. No, in the context of U.S. politics, with our spectrum, the American people are cuddling up right next to Bernie Sanders, and they love it. Okay. Now, let's do one more before we take a break here. And we're going to go to ProPublica, and they're reporting on a failure here, the Bush administration. ProPublica is reporting on a failure of the Obama administration on the issue of discrimination. Did I say the Bush administration before? I feel like I said the Bush administration. Did I say that before the story? I meant Obama. Okay, one more time. ProPublica is reporting on a failure of the Obama administration on the issue of discrimination. They say the Obama administration has roundly criticized states such as North Carolina and Mississippi for passing laws that allow discrimination in the name of religious freedom. But at the same time, the administration has left in place a 2007 memo from the Bush White House that allows religious charities with federal contracts to discriminate in hiring for federally funded programs. Now, as Obama prepares to leave office, a group of prominent constitutional lawyers is calling on the Obama White House to revoke the legal memo, which they argue has been used by religious groups to refuse to provide services, including emergency contraception for human trafficking victims that conflict with their beliefs. All right, now, everybody needs to stop and think about that. We have religious charities, which might already be an issue in and of itself that they're getting money, but they're getting money, and there's no strings attached. So in other words, they're allowed to discriminate against whoever they want to discriminate against because of their religious beliefs and still get tax money. That's fucking crazy. So imagine here for a second, they give you one example of a Catholic group or Christian group refusing emergency contraception for human trafficking victims. Oh my goodness, is that low. Imagine also, for example, some Islamic charity that refuses to hire or support, let's say they fight for homeless people, but they refuse to hire or support homeless gay people because they're gay, and that goes against their beliefs. Or you could say a Christian group perhaps does the same thing. Are we okay with that? I'm certainly not. But see, this is an important thing here because when you look at it, apparently the Democrats, when it comes to big states doing the discrimination, so when it comes to, like they say, Mississippi, North Carolina, so on and so forth, them saying, I'm going to discriminate against trans people or gay people because of my religion. It's like the Obama administration goes, bad. No, don't do that. Come on, that's too much. You're a huge state. That's not fair. But when it's a smaller group, when it's a small religious charity, he's like, well, I mean, I guess you have a religious freedom, right? Religious liberty. No. That's not the right way to think about it, man. As I've said before, you only have the religious liberty to abide by the same laws as everybody else. So if your religion, for example, in my opinion, if your religion wants you to dress a certain way, well, then, yeah, you could dress a certain way. You're not taking away anybody else's rights. You're not breaking any laws. So, okay, there's your religious freedom. You get to dress however you want and say, it's because of my religion I dress like this. There you go. There's your religious freedom. But when you say, my religion allows me to override laws that everybody else has to follow, well, then I tell you to fuck off because then you're getting special rights. You're not getting equal rights. You're getting special rights. So, for example, I got in trouble recently when I covered the story about I think it was a Sikh person in the military who wanted to wear their headgear. And the rules of the uniform were you can't wear your headgear. But they got a special exemption to wear the headgear. Okay, I have a problem with that. The Sikh person can wear the headgear because religion, but let's say I'm a secular person and I have a hat that is a lucky hat and a special hat. It's a hat my mother gave me and my mother died, and I want to wear my hat. And it's covering my head. It's my own headgear. He's allowed to wear his headgear because religion. I'm not allowed to wear my headgear because I'm secular. Well, see, that would be discrimination against secular people. You're giving special rules and favoritism to religious people. It's the same thing that we're talking about here. You only have the religious liberty to follow the same laws as everybody else. If your religious liberty means you get to break laws, well, then that's religious anarchy. That's not religious liberty. Then why? What would stop us from saying, oh, by the way, your religion allows for human sacrifice. So go ahead. I wouldn't want to be a bigot against your religion. Your religion does rain dances and human sacrifice, so go ahead. No, that's crazy. We would all go, whoa, that's too far. Right, that's too far, but why is it too far? It's too far because you just said, in the name of my religion, I get to do whatever I want, and your pesky laws don't apply to me. Well, the same thing should happen here. If some secular group, some secular charity decided, we're not going to help gay people. We're not going to help gay people. Why? We don't want to help gay people. Fuck gay people. We don't want to help them. They say, that's brazen discrimination. That's grotesque, and we're not going to allow you. You have to help them. Hey, I don't want to help black people. I don't want to help black people. What do you want me to do? I'm a southern charity. I don't want to help black people. People go, that's discriminatory. You can't do that. But when it's a religious group, they say, hey, look, we don't want to give contraception to this girl who was raped because it's against our beliefs. Well, I don't give a fuck. Give her the contraception. I don't care about your religious liberty and religious rights to override other people's rights or your religious liberty to override secular laws because I don't believe in a religious anarchy. And by the way, if you take the opposite position of this, you are a textbook fundamentalist. You don't get to take this position and then have people not call you a fundamentalist. You are a fundamentalist if you say, my religion allows me to override secular laws. Well, that would put you kind of in league with the Taliban. So that's not a position that you want to, have because you're in bed with a bunch of unsavory people if you take that position. So the Obama administration, and here's the part that should piss off everybody, the Obama administration, they could reverse it like that right now. Right now, all it takes is them signing their own memo or their own executive order. Oh, but because Bush did it via executive order. All he's got to do is, okay, here, done. Now you can't do that. Now, any charity that gets money from the federal government, they have to abide by non-discrimination clauses. Right now, there's an exemption. If you're a religious charity, you don't have to abide by non-discrimination clauses. You can do whatever you want and just hide behind, it's my religion. It's my religious beliefs. So I get to not do contraception for girls who were raped and they were in human trafficking. If I don't want to, I don't have to serve gays, yada, yada, yada. It's so sad that in the year 2016, we're still wrestling with these like primitive cultish beliefs. I mean, religions are just big cults. That's not to say that everybody in the religion is bad. Of course not. But the ideologies and the fact that you have holy books that people in the religion, you know, accept to varying degrees, but the fact that there's still people who go, yeah, no, totally, we gotta follow this. That's fucking crazy. Like, it's 2016, and people are still like, old book of mythology. Come on, give it to me. I gotta go through. I gotta look for answers for life. Well, why not look at Mother Goose, too, while you're at it? How about that? Oh, I know, I'm not allowed to say that. I can't hurt the feelings of the religious. I don't care about your fucking feelings. Take your outrage for a hike. I don't give a shit. We're still wrestling with these beliefs, and it's 2016. That's pathetic. Okay. All right, so let's take our final break here. When we come back, we have a first-of-its-kind lawsuit coming out of Colorado. Yippee skippy. And it's actually kind of a sad story. So, and my feelings on it are actually a little more mixed than you might think. Okay, because it has to do with marijuana. It has to do with something negative that happened. And I want to give you the breakdown of that. And then, like I said at the top of the show here, George Zimmerman. George Zimmerman is in the show today. I'm not happy about that, but it's necessary to cover him. And he's at it again, man. I mean, all the stories that have covered George Zimmerman post the incident with Trayvon have all been about other things that that happened with the law. Like, he got in trouble with the law. Well, now we have something that's not necessarily him in trouble with the law, but yet again, it just shows his character. Did you know there was a time recently when Zimmerman like retweeted a picture of Trayvon Martin laying dead on the ground? Dude, you're just a bad person. Like, there's no counter argument. Like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Even if you believe, oh my God, it was totally justified and you had to kill him because of this, this, and this. Even if you believe that, to retweet the picture of him laying dead on the ground? Unbelievable. All right, so stay right there. We'll discuss all that and much more. Blog Talk Radio, Secular Talk Radio, Kyle Klinsky Show. We'll be right back. Alright, son of a bitch, we got 30 minutes left, and I got some gems here for you. We have a first-of-its-kind lawsuit coming out of Colorado here. The Guardian explains, a Colorado family has sued a marijuana dispensary alleging that an unreasonably dangerous cannabis-infused candy was responsible for the murder of their loved one in a wrongful death suit. The three sons of Christine Kirk, who was killed by her husband Richard Kirk in 2014, filed a lawsuit against Nutritional Elements, a Denver dispensary, claiming that the business sold the man a candy that failed to adequately warn users about the risks of psychosis and paranoia and led him to suffer hallucinations before he fatally shot his wife. All right, now, before, perhaps have the same reaction that I did, let me continue here because I think it gets even more interesting. Andrew Monti, a University of Colorado emergency medicine physician, offered expert testimony included in the lawsuit, writing, "It is my professional opinion that Mr. Kirk was intoxicated with THC, leading to delirium and psychotic-like symptoms at the time of the homicide." So, in other words, they're saying, well, if it wasn't for the fact that he took it, he wouldn't have killed his wife, because he took it and then he had delirium and psychotic-like symptoms, and that's when he shot his wife, and he was totally out of his skull, and he didn't know what the fuck he was doing. Oh, boy. All right, so the first thing that came to mind when I read this was honestly a story that we covered recently, which explains how in a small percentage of people, I forget the exact number, forgive me, but they have it's actually a gene that makes it so that their reaction to marijuana is a reaction like this. By the way, I think I have that gene because at least half the time, it's probably more than half the time, that I smoke weed in my life, and I've probably only smoked weed, I don't know, 15 times or so, something like that, I was paranoid. And, you know, I'm always like, my mind goes down these weird paths, and I'm thinking that, you know, I'm in danger and somebody's going to attack me. It's just weird. Like, I'm always paranoid, okay? So I can relate to that feeling of like, oh, my God, you become paranoid, you become insecure, you have, like, some psychotic symptoms. Now, I'm somebody who knows enough about drugs that I knew, like, okay, this is going to wear off eventually, so I was able to kind of calm myself down or whatever. But, I mean, obviously there's some people where that's not the case. And furthermore, edibles, the way your body processes edibles, you get even fucking way higher than when you just smoke weed. I don't know exactly why that is, but I've read some articles on it. And just the way that your body processes it, it has basically more of a psychoactive effect. It's more, it kind of acts like a hallucinogen in a way if you eat it and your tolerance is low, and especially if you have this gene that we're referring to, which some people have a bad reaction to marijuana. Now, obviously, to be crystal clear here, most people do not have that gene, and you talk to most people, and people who smoke weed on a regular basis, they go, no, it just relaxes me and it makes me feel good, and yada yada. So this is not to demonize marijuana. This is not to demonize weed smokers. I would give you guys the right to smoke. I would think it should be legal, taxed, and regulated. And, you know, I'm not coming after you in any way. But reading this, what would my decision be if I'm the judge and I had leeway and I could basically do whatever ruling I want? Well, one of the things they say in the article is apparently this particular dispensary and this particular candy didn't have the necessary facts on the packaging. And it didn't have the necessary warnings on the packaging. Well, if I'm the judge and I have the ability, would I say, okay, well, now I'm going to mandate that you have it? Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I don't see any argument against that. Like, and don't get me wrong, I'm sure most dispensaries do put, you know, exactly how much THC is in there and exactly what the potential downsides are and exactly the recommended dose. But, I mean, to me, when I read stuff like this, I think, oh, this is what basic regulation is all about. So weed should be legal, it should be taxed, it should be regulated, and under that umbrella of regulation, I would put, yes, I'd put a warning, yes, I'd put the amount of THC, yes, I'd be very specific about that warning, and I'd let people know, hey, just because, you know, you're eating it doesn't mean it has the exact same effect as smoking it, it's more powerful if you eat it, and, you know, some people sit there and they'll pop these, like, weed chocolates or whatever, or sour gummies or whatever, and then they have like six of them. Later on, they're in the fucking hospital. They go to the hospital because they think they're going to die because they don't know that you're supposed to actually eat like half of one. You see what I mean? So I think education is the most important thing. Yes, there are some people, probably myself included, who it's just not their drug, so you should stay away from it. But outside of that, education is the answer. Education, regulation, more disclosure and transparency. And then after you do that, would I do anything else? No, I don't think so. So I'm not exactly sure based on the article here from The Guardian what they're suing for. I didn't look to me like they were asking for money. It didn't look like they were trying to put the company out of business. But maybe I'm wrong on that. But it appears like they're – one of the things they're saying is just label it, man. Fucking label it properly. Put the amount of THC, put the recommended dose, put, hey, warning, in some people it has these reactions, yada, yada. I don't think that's reefer madness. I don't think that's propaganda. I think in some cases, a small percentage of cases, it is true. So those warnings are necessary. And my heart goes out to the family because it is a really sad scenario. I mean, we've also covered stories. There's – very, very rare instances, but they do happen, of people who they'll eat it and they have the similar symptoms and then they think they could fly and they jump out a fucking window. Again, we got to be crystal clear, though. You don't blame all marijuana users. You don't blame marijuana. You don't blame the fact that it should be legal, taxed, and regulated. Not at all. But the answer is, like I said, more education, more regulation, more disclosure. That's the answer here, and outside of that, it's just a tragic, tragic situation, and my heart goes out to the people affected. Okay. Now we go from a story about weed to a story about meat. Fucking random, isn't it? I'd say so. But this is actually super, really incredible. You almost can't believe it. Bloomberg has a gut-wrenching article about the state of the meat industry in the U.S. They say, workers in plants run by the largest U.S. poultry producers are regularly being denied bathroom breaks, and as a result, some are reduced to wearing diapers while working on the processing line, Oxfam America said in a report Wednesday. The report cited unnamed workers from Tyson Foods, Inc., Pilgrim's Pride Corporation, Purdue Farms, and Sanderson Farms, who said that supervisors mock them, ignore requests, and threaten punishment or firing. When they can go, they wait in long lines, even though they are given limited time, sometimes 10 minutes. Oxfam said the cost of cheap chicken in the U.S. is workers who face low wages, suffer elevated rates of injury and illness, and face a climate of fear in the workplace. So when I went through this article, my initial reaction was actually something they went on to bring up in the article, which is, oh, this reminds me of The Jungle, Upton Sinclair, the book from the early 1900s that spoke about the state of the meat industry, and how it was just an absolute, utter disaster with no regulation and no protections, and it's gross for a variety of different reasons. It looks like we haven't really gone too far past that era. I mean, I guess in some ways we have, but when you have people who are working for you, by the way, my guess would be probably undocumented, which is why they get away with treating them like this, and you have them working for you, and they're standing in diapers as they do their job. Yet again, what this reminds me of is like the shrimp story we covered. I don't know if you guys remember that, but the shrimp industry is actually rife with slavery, like outright forced labor. There are some countries where, and you can trace the, you know, the product line all the way to, you know, the corporations in the U.S. that end up selling it for dirt cheap in stores. Like on the other end of that is basically slave labor in some third world country where people are sleeping in like tenement house situations and there's no plumbing and it's super dirty and, you know, there's mixing in fecal matter with their hands as they fucking do what they got to do with the shrimp. And look, man, I know I'm not the only one. In fact, this is probably a majority position if you poll on it. If it meant paying 50 cents more $1 more, $3 more, whatever it is, for standard goods and food products and things of that nature, we'd pay that if it means not having slave labor. We would pay that if it means workers' rights and protections. But obviously with this corporate supremacist system that we have, it's all about the profit motive. It's all about driving down costs, and it's basically a race to the bottom. And this is why you see, even in a climate where the American people are grossed out by this and disgusted by it and they want to change it, we even have Democratic politicians, never mind the Republicans who are totally bought off, but even the Democrats are like, we should do more free trade deals. Obama did the Colombian free trade deal, which was a disaster, the Panama free trade deal, which made it easier to do tax dodging. Now they're pushing for the TPP. I mean, what a joke this is. Did you know that Malaysia is part of the TPP? The Obama administration fought for Malaysia to be part of the TPP. Even though Malaysia, and I quote, tolerates slavery. So they have a horrific workers' rights situation there, and Obama's like, totally got to let them in. They do slavery? Whatevs. Let them in. Again, why? Because he's not really in control. It's the corporations. It's his corporate overlords who are pulling the strings. Okay, we need to make more money. We need to make a deal with these people. So even though he tolerates slavery, put it in there. To the point where the Obama government, the executive branch, released a new report, and they were like, oh, did the report from last year say that Malaysia does slavery? They totally cleaned it all up, bro. Not anymore. It's all fixed. So that's the new trick they do. Tolerate human rights abuses and forced labor, and then turn around, and if you got to doctor your reports to say, oh, everything's hunky-dory there now, do that just so you can get the deal passed. And also, by the way, so you can ship out more good-paying U.S. jobs with regulation overseas where there's less regulation. But in this case, what we're learning is, at least when it comes to the meat industry, apparently the regulations are super lax in the U.S. where people are shitting in diapers on fucking processing lines. Nobody's in favor of this, okay? Nobody's in favor of this. And by the way, probably the biggest takeaway from this is why we need strong unions. This is why we need collective bargaining and workers' rights. Because when you don't have that, when you have people in the shadows, well, this is the result. They are going to take advantage of you. They are going to force you to do extra work, and they are going to pay you as little as humanly possible. So the answer is liberal politics. The answer is progressivism. The answer is Bernie Sanders-style governance. The answer is unions and workers coming together to fight for our rights. We can't tolerate stuff like this any longer. Isn't that incredible, man? We're talking about the United States of America, and we got people working, standing in line, shitting in diapers for you, so that when they make meat, and who wants to eat that meat? Like, oh, no big deal. The guy who handled it shat himself. Like, what? What is this? This is what we've come to? God, we need unions. We need to fight back. We need workers' rights. It's amazing how they'll treat you if they feel they can get away with it. And we have a government that's representing their interests, representing the interests of the well-off. So they're not representing the interests of the people. If that were the case, perhaps people wouldn't be shitting in their diapers. Okay. Now we got to go to George Zimmerman. Oh, you think I want to cover this story? There's not a single part of me that wants to cover this story, but I got to do it. George Zimmerman is auctioning off the gun that he killed Trayvon Martin with. Stay classy. So I want to give you his quotes here because, as usual, he keeps it classy. He said, I'm a free American. I can do what I like with my possessions. It's time to move past the firearm, and if I sell it and it sells, and I move past it. Wait, what? That made no sense. Let's repeat that. I'm a free American. I can do what I like with my possessions. It's time to move past the firearm, and if I sell it and it sells, I move past it. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. By selling the gun, are you saying that you get – because it seems to me like for a while you've been basking in the incident, and you don't want to get past it, and you have no ill will about it. In fact, your whole fucking defense was he had it coming. So what are you talking about? And remember, guys, he's been in the news a few times since the trial and since he was free to go. Almost every time it was he's in trouble with the law again. There was one bullshit made-up story, a PR story about, oh, he saved the guy from a burning car. Yeah, I'm sure he did. But there were more run-ins with the law and domestic abuse instances and a whole bunch of stuff. And then now he's trying to sell the firearm. And recently he had retweeted a picture on Twitter where somebody, like, congratulating him, like a fawning tweet congratulating him. And in that tweet was a picture of Trayvon laying dead on the ground. Dude, even if you're somebody who would argue, oh, yeah, Trayvon had it coming and George is a hero, yada, yada. Even if you're in that crowd, that camp, you don't think it's tasteless to retweet the thing with the dead body of Trayvon? But, you know, trying to understand that his family is human and they have emotions and it really is just a low life thing to do. Like, you don't, that thought doesn't cross your mind. You can't agree with that. No, it really is. It's stunning. I mean, this guy is as low as it gets. So I'm not done yet, because not only did he say the thing that made no sense right there, but also he continues, the firearm is fully functional as the attempts by the Department of Justice on behalf of B. Hussein Obama to render the firearm inoperable were thwarted by my phenomenal defense attorney. I'm proud to announce that a portion of the proceeds will be used to fight Black Lives Matter violence. What the fuck? Against law enforcement officers, ensure the demise of Angela Corey's persecution career and Hillary Clinton's anti-firearm rhetoric. Dude, what the fuck are you talking about? Now, that's not even true, by the way. I have no doubt that the reason he's selling it is because he ran out of fucking money. He ran out of money. He's still got to pay back his legal bills. He's probably got 1,000 other bills that have been piling up. His credit score is probably negative 12,000. And he's like, I'm going to sell it. Don't worry. I'm going to donate it to these fucking stupid causes that he made up. But in reality, he's going to take that money and he's immediately going to put it towards shit that he needs to put it towards. Dude, there is no way that he would do this unless he desperately needed the money and he needed it for personal use. And he should also be fucking careful, because perhaps when you say you're going to use it for X and you don't, there are potential lawsuits that could be brought against you. But then again, he does have a track record of dodging accountability. It's kind of his thing. Here we are, George Zimmerman. George Zimmerman is so concerned about the safety of people that he wants to fight Black Lives Matter. Look, again, whatever your opinion might be on Black Lives Matter, okay, go and read what their policy proposals are, what their positions are on, I think it's campaignzero.com or .org. We covered it on the show. What it shows you is, putting all the rhetoric and all the individual actors aside, what it shows you is it cuts through to exactly what they're really about and what their core message is, what is literally their platform. And when you do that and when you look at what they're in favor of, you go through, you go, oh, all of those things are reasonable. Like, every single one of the things makes sense. Where, you know, they say, hey, maybe we should demilitarize the cops, not so that they don't have firearms, but so that maybe we get rid of the former, like, military tanks that some of them are using, and we make it so that it's not that they have a hammer and everything looks like a nail, because that's a problem that we have nowadays. Hey, maybe we do some community oversight, you know, so that there's a board that holds the cops accountable, that represents the people, because the cops obviously are viewed as an invading army in many respects here. Hey, maybe we redo the training so that cops don't immediately take out their guns and kill people, and you train them in de-escalation tactics and make that like a focus so that we can limit the number of unarmed people who are being shot and killed in the street. So when you look at the actual things they're in favor of, it's like almost all of them are like, duh. Like, it's amazing we don't already have those things in place. But this jackass, all he does is he views them as, they're so violent. How ironic is that? As he rants about how violent the other is, he's the guy who actually jumped to violence and ended up killing somebody. I mean, it's classic, it's persecution complex, victim complex 101. You've seen this throughout history. The people who scream the most about, we're the victim, we're oppressed, they're the ones who end up doing violence most of the time. That's what George Zimmerman is. The BLM violence, they're so violent, 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 gotta be on the side of the cops, on the side of the cops no matter what. Well, why wouldn't you want to be more nuanced about it? Doesn't the individual situation matter? Doesn't it matter? Hey, in this case, it seems like the person was unarmed and the cop shouldn't have shot him. Hey, in this case, perhaps it was the person who was wrong and the cop who was right. But no, it's fucking tribalism. Ironically, again, as he accuses the other side of tribalism. So this is George Zimmerman 101 at this point. Be Hussein Obama. You know, they've been trying to take my guns. They're not trying to take your guns because they're waging a war on the Second Amendment. They're trying to take your guns because you're a fucking crazy person. And even if you poll Republicans, they go, yeah, there should be background checks, and people like this guy shouldn't have guns. So that's where we're at right now. So George Zimmerman, keeping it classy, as always, he can go fuck right off. That's my take on him. Okay. Now we're going to move on to a Saudi Arabian family. A Saudi Arabian therapist who gives advice to families, and a tutorial he released on a questionable topic, to say the least. And then also, I have some good news for everybody in the world. that'll be our last story. It's about alcohol, so everybody should get excited about that one. A Saudi Arabian family therapist released a tutorial on wife beating. Not a good idea. Really not a good idea. So Khalid al-Sakabi said the following, quote, the beating should not be performed with a rod, nor should it be a headband, I don't even know what that one means, or a sharp object, which I am sad to say some husbands use. It should be done with something like the Sewick tooth cleaning twig, again, I don't know what the fuck that is, or a handkerchief. What? Because the goal is merely to make the wife feel that she was wrong in the way she treated her husband. All right, let's pause here. See, obviously you are not wrong by beating her. You are right by definition. You're the man. But what you have to do is you need to make your wife realize that she treated you wrong. You're so offended and hurt by your wife that you now have the right to pummel her fucking face in. Seems fair, right? Seems intelligent and rational. He's not done yet. According to The Independent, he says, you must remind her of your rights and of her duties according to Allah. Unfortunately, some wives want to live a life of equality with their husband. This is a very grave problem. Oh, it's so sad how disconnected these people are with basic human decency and morality. Again, look at how he frames that. He says, you must remind her of your rights and of her duties. Your rights to beat the fuck out of her and to have her obey you no matter what. And that's her duty. Her duty is just, you have to do what I say. That's what your entire existence is about. The arrogance and the certitude of these idiots, as if any woman would really want to treat you nicely when you're such an unbearable, insufferable cunt. You're just a bad person and you're so entitled. My rights are for you to worship me and tell me I'm special as I beat your fucking ass repeatedly. Fuck off! We don't like you. Nobody likes you. And then the fact that, like, to him this is a duh, and that's what's so disconcerting about this. He says, well, some wives want to live a life of equality with their husband. This is a very grave problem. How is that a duh to you? Like, equality, bad, clearly. Because you know what it is, man? Call it for what it is. Because of cultural reasons and religious fundamentalist reasons. Well, these are the values that we're supposed to abide by. And he even mentions, Allah says, God says. So when, you know, a pesky person who has a fucking functioning brain from the West, like myself, criticizes him, oh, silly fucking Western white boy, you don't know what you're talking about. I got God on my side. No, but that's the thing, you don't. That's the thing, you made it up. the society, the culture, the fundamentalist religion is bullshit. It's not true. So at the end of the day, when you remove the fact that you believe in Mother Goose and Narnia, all you're doing is beating your wife and inflicting pain and harm on another human being on this planet, which makes you a bad person, which makes you evil. So when you remove the veneer of the fundamentalist religion, which tells him this is right, this is how she should act, then at the end of the day, you're the problem. You're the immoral one. You're the unethical one. You're the bad one. And she is a victim of your stupidity, arrogance, ignorance, and fundamentalism. So your religion isn't true. You know, your cultural beliefs are not true. And let's be clear to any cultural relevance who would say, who are you to judge? No, I am judging. I am judging, and I'm right. Because treating women equally is superior to not treating them equally. Treating women equally is right. It's not an equal and opposite opinion to say, or maybe we should punch them in the face repeatedly and treat them like trash. No, that would make you a bad person. That would make you wrong, and we are right. So for them to be condescendingly looking down on us, like, oh, backwards liberal values. No, correct liberal values. You're the one that's wrong. But my religion says the opposite. I don't give a fuck what your religion says. How do you know you're right? There's over 4,000 religions that exist today. Are you really stupid enough to believe you're so precious and you're so special that you just happen to be born into the one true religion? And the other 3,999? Bullshit. Bullshit. No, even simply looking at it from a mathematical perspective like we just did, you are certainly incorrect. And if you can't realize that, it's pathetic. I like blew out my voice there for a second. All right, final story of the day here. And by the way, no show tomorrow. Yet again, I'm fucking up to my eyeballs in new studio stuff and bank stuff. It's happening, dog, so you should be excited about that, but also very sad that there's no show tomorrow, as I am. Go to the Independent and leave you with a smile on your face here. The Independent has some good news here for everybody on the planet. They say a beer or two a day could protect from heart attacks, scientists suggest. Italian researchers found drinking around 1.4 pints of beer a day could reduce the risk of heart disease by around 25%. All right, now, I just want to pause here for a second to let everybody know my initial reaction was to call bullshit on this. And not even just to call bullshit, really, as much to say, on issues like alcohol consumption and coffee drinking and things like that, there's like a contradicting study in the headlines every other month. Like, sometimes you'll say, oh, coffee is good for you for reasons X, Y, and Z, and then 2 months later, coffee's bad for you. It'll give you ass cancer and all that stuff. So it's almost like I immediately dismiss anything and everything that's like a study on alcohol or coffee because there's so much conflicting stuff. But I reverse my opinion after reading the next part. They say, the findings come from a meta-review of 150 studies conducted by the Mediterranean Neurological Institute. Okay. So this is not bullshit, because if there's anything that overrides a study, it is what they call a meta-review, what's called here a meta-analysis, which is you look at multiple studies and you give the conclusion based on, in this case, 150 different studies. Well, if that's the case, then it's almost certainly true. The results of a meta-analysis are so much more reliable than any individual study. So, yippee-skippy. Everybody can celebrate because apparently if you moderately drink on a daily basis, one or two drinks, whatever the case is, that actually may be good for you in the sense that it decreases or reduces the risk of heart disease by around 25%. So go ahead and drink up. All right, guys. I love you. I'll see you next month. I'll see you on Monday. Much love. Mwah. Peace.